Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Oscar-nominated actress and Emmy-nominated choreographer Rosie Perez is known for her effervescent personality and memorable roles in Do the Right Thing, White Men Can't Jump, Fearless, and Pineapple Express. But most of her fans would be surprised to learn she had a childhood straight out of a Dickens novel, abandoned by her schizophrenic mother shortly after her out-of-wedlock birth. She was raised by a loving aunt, whom she thought to be her mother until she was about three. One fateful day, her mother showed up, took her from her aunt, and without any explanation, sent her to live at a Catholic home for boys and girls. And then her troubles began. She writes about it in her new book, Handbook for an Unpredictable Life, How I Survive, Sister Renata, and My Crazy Mother, and Still Came Out Smiling with Great Hair. It's a great pleasure to welcome Rosie Perez to the Roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
A delight. How important do you think it is, ultimately, when we think of you as an artist and we think of you and your great work, for us to have an idea of your struggles and what you went through in your life, to give context, really?
Well, I mean, to be quite frank, as an actor, it's not that wise of a thing to do because you have to retain a certain level of mystery, if you will. I figured if I'm just talking about my childhood and things that occurred 25 years ago as well, there's still a part of me present day that I still keep close. You know, so I felt it was time outside of my career, in my personal life, I think it's really important, you know, it, just as a person, as a human being, to be able to come to a place where I can reveal a secret that was a burden, was a thing that I wanted to reveal but never had the wherewithal or didn't have the right opportunity or it wasn't the right time to do so. And when it presented itself, I just said, okay. And I'm glad I did.
I guess that's what I'm interested in because you held back for a long time and understandably so. And you talk about not having the emotional strength to really lay out the years of abuse for the world to see. At what point did you know you were ready for that?
I think it was after I finished writing it. I wasn't ready when I was asked again. I was asked all the time from the beginning of my career, and I always said no, and I always knew that people had this idea conjured up in their head that it was going to be some hip-hop tale, if you will, which it's not. And then just when it was presented to me, everything was coinciding. You know, the kids from my charity asked me to stand up and tell my story because I asked out of them. During that same time period, I had a book agent that wanted to rep me. And I said, oh, sure, let me write a book about my aunt's recipes or her favorite sayings. And he says, what about your mother? I said, oh, that's off limits. And he goes, oh, I want that book. I told one of my co-workers at my charity, and she said, oh, of course you got to write it because it's for the kids. And I said, oh, my God, you're right. And that's when I decided to just give in and let go.
When your mother came back into your life when you were 3 years old, she sent you to, as I mentioned, live at a Catholic home for boys and girls. You were in that home for how long?
Till I was 8 years old.
And how often did you see your mother?
I didn't see her often. It was very sporadic. Her visits, they were random. I remember the first time I got to go to her house that I could recall. I think it was about, I don't exactly remember, maybe five, six, maybe seven. I'm not sure. That's what I was told, but what I remember was about 7, 8. So, no, I didn't see her often.
And then after 8 years old, describe and give listeners a sense of the relationship, because it's still, there is, it's so tumultuous, there really is no constant, is there?
The relationship was very strained and very tense. That's how I would say. It was always tense. As I say in the preface, I was always walking on the eggshells around her.
Mm.
It's a weird thing for a child to want a parent that seemingly doesn't want them or doesn't want to engage with them in a way a parent should engage with a child. And I see that often as an adult, you know, just walking down the streets of New York, just these abusive parents and have no regard for their kids, and the kid just desperately wanting a connection, you know, a TV connection, if you will. And I think that that was the relationship.
At what point in your life did the art start to enter and you figured that that could be some sort of refuge for you?
Art was always a refuge for me, but it was never a consideration as a career. The opportunity was ironically presented by the nuns at the home. They were very, very generous and very, very good at providing us entertainment through the arts, you know. But that didn't occur until the night I was asked to be on Soul Train by a talent scout, and then later when I met Spike Lee at a nightclub. So it was kind of like the decision was made for me, and I went along with it, thinking, oh, this will be cute, this will be fun. But it wasn't my intention to have it as a career.
Those appearances early on Soul Train and working as a choreographer and as ultimately a director and dancer, how important was that for you in sort of finding yourself and finding your place and finding what you were good at?
That wasn't the thought process. My thought process was, I know I could do this. I'm going to do it. That's how it was.
That's
how it's always been.
You do get the sense in the book that you had the confidence. I mean, that's what many people say who have had a horrible childhood or great abuse, that they lose the confidence. But you had confidence.
Yes, I had confidence. What I didn't have confidence was being social. But if you put a record on, I had confidence to get up and dance. Did I have confidence to interact with the other partygoers? No. It was very strange. You know, so I was very socially awkward. I still am to an extent. Please excuse the sirens in the background. I am in Brooklyn, so your listeners, I apologize. That's not a movie soundtrack. That's real life.
Are you most comfortable in New York? Is that a good home for you?
I am. I'm very, very comfortable. Specifically Brooklyn. I mean, I love Manhattan, you know, the city for the nightlife and entertainment and restaurants, but Brooklyn is where I let my hair down and just be me, you know, and I could be my authentic self here. I love it.
When you think of your career now, how do you look? Do you still look at it as multifaceted and has many different directions and there's many places for you to go?
I look at my career just as what's the next opportunity or what's the next opportunity that I can create. When I see entertainers refer to themselves as a triple threat, I don't think in those terms.
Right.
I'm just thinking, oh, I want to do this now, or this is interesting. Yeah, I'll try that. I don't know if that makes any sense to you.
No, it does. So it doesn't say, okay, I had a lot of fun with this, with acting. I would like to experience more of this, or boy, it's been a while since I've done something in the dance and theater world. I would like to do that.
No, it's more like, hey, would you like to do theater? Let me see if it's good.
Yeah.
Oh, it's good? Okay, yeah, I'll do that. You know, or if I hear about something, I go, I want to do that. Can you see if I can get that? I'll try out for it if they don't want me. I'll audition. I'll probably get it. You know, that's kind of how I think. And if I don't get it, I go, oh, well. You know, when you grow up with constant disappointment, when you're an adult, the disappointments that I endure in regards to work or career, it's a piece of cake.
Yeah.
The other type of disappointments in life as an adult is like when there's a death in a family or a relationship has been broken. Those things still hit me really, really hard. But in regards to my career, I work really hard for it, and I'm also very lucky and fortunate. So it's it's not a huge crisis or letdown if something doesn't happen. I just say, okay, wasn't meant to be. And I think I learned that from, you know, different various things from my past. One is because, you know, I wanted to be a marine biologist. I was going for my biochem major, and then I'm on Soul Train. You're like, oh, wow, left turn? Anyone? And, you know, when it's kind of like that. But also, in the home, I always felt like I was doing time, and I was just preparing for life. So I was very open to whatever possibilities that may present itself. And so I feel like I'm the same way. It's just that the ambition is different. It's not, I wouldn't say desperate, but it's not so intense.
You have a confidence again, and it's not that you feel prepared. It's not that you're preparing, but you're waiting for the next good thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like I'm walking down the road, enjoying the walk, and then a new avenue presents itself, and I'll go, oh, let me go down here. This is great. Or someone says, you should go down here, or you're supposed to go down there. I'm just open like that. The only time I say no is if there's a gut-wrenching instinct that says this is not right for you.
You mentioned luck and good fortune, and certainly that has been a part of it. But it goes beyond luck. I mean, you've had such wonderful collaborations and a wonderful group of people that you've have worked with. That seems that there's something more to that than just luck.
Well, like I said, I work hard.
Yeah.
I work really, really, really hard. And that I would attribute to the nuns at the home and also to my aunt. I watched this woman get up every day at 4 or 5 in the morning to work 3 different jobs a day, not come home till 8, 9 o'clock at night. And she did that 5 days a week. And then on the weekend, she sold irregular dresses illegally for extra cash for us. And the nuns, you know, was get up, line up, do the day, finish the day, do what you're supposed to do. And so when I had a potential to choreograph, let's say, Heavy D and the Boys, you know, I prepared. I was caught not prepared once. That was my first gig because I didn't know how it went. But, you know, once I understood, okay, this is how it goes, I told myself I will never be caught off guard again. So, you know, when the record company executive, Andre Harrell, came up to see the dance number, I had it complete. And even the stuff that wasn't completed, I made up on the spot. But I knew I was going to make it up. I said to myself, it's not finished. It's okay. Make it up. Just keep going. And so, you know, so therefore I was able to have that opportunity, that collaboration, and it was a good one. And I have great work practice. I walk in a room, good morning, how you doing? Nice to meet you. You know, I come in on time. I stay late. I do it all.
The title of the book is Handbook for an Unpredictable Life. Do you feel that your life is still unpredictable? And if so, do you like it that way?
It is unpredictable. Sometimes it's very scary. Gosh, nobody has asked me that. Isn't that incredible? This whole entire book tour, no one's asked me that. And that's the title of the book. You know, sometimes it's scary. When it gets scary is when it's personal, when it's not so much, you know, work-related. Like I said, with work, I'm open to wherever it may take me. But when it comes to life, I go, whoa, slow down. That's when I love when things are predictable. But just even my current marriage, I knew this man for 17 years, never looked at him as marriage material. One day we have a conversation, and the next day we're on a date, and we've been together ever since, and then we elope, and we got married. Hmm. It's very unpredictable, and all my friends were like, can you believe that? And I go, I can't believe it. And it's wonderful. And I'm glad that it happened now that I'm older and I can handle it better. But still, it kind of gave me, when it was all happening, slight anxiety. Because one thing as a child, while I was doing that time, my goals were not money, fortune, and fame. My goals were stability, true connections, true relationships, and honesty. And the first one of all is stability. Oh, and healthcare. I always knew I was supposed to have helped you.
And it seems as though the one thing that is that really kind of keeps you is the fact that there's really not much that life can throw at you that you're not somewhat ready for.
That is true. I mean, sometimes it knocks me down, you know. But like my sister says, we're like the weevil wobbles, you know, knock us down and we'll get right back up. I do know that's what my path has influenced, you know, my ability to take a hit. I just wish it didn't come the way, you know, through abuse. I think I would have still been that person with that ability to bounce back. I just wish it didn't have to be marred with great anxiety and PTSD from all the trauma. I could have done without that. And I always hated when people go, well, you shouldn't feel bad about your past because it made you who you are today. And I go, that is such BS. Have you ever been through what I went through? No. Have you ever been abused? No. So how dare you tell me that? Mm. You're saying that I should feel fortunate, or I should just excuse the abuse, or rationalize it, or say that was part of the journey? No. I'm sorry. I could have done without my mother punching me in the face. I could have done without the nuns beating me till I bled. I could have done without all of that. Thank you very much. And I do know now with therapy, I've been removing all of that crap, all of those years to get back to who I really was, who I really am. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And certainly, and I think that's a great point, because I've heard people say that, and I've never quite understood that argument. And the only thing I think it could possibly assist in is the great work that you do with kids and your charity work in helping other people, because you understand what they've been through.
Yes. But I probably would be working with them anyway. I probably wouldn't have deep empathy that I have for them, but I still think I would have been as effective, but maybe in a different way, you know. And I'm glad I'm effective in this particular way. And I also would love to just add, I'm not a rarity. There are so many people who have endured traumatic childhoods that have come out smiling as well. I hope they have great hair, but during this book tour, I started to think about it, and I told my husband, I said, they're making me out like this martyr. There's so many people who are the same, that have survived, have triumphed. I'm just one that has a platform.
The book is really incredible. It's Handbook for an Unpredictable Life, How I Survive Sister Renata and My Crazy Mother and Still Came Out Smiling with Great Hair. The book is published by Crown. Rosie Perez, what a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for sharing with us. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, too. I loved our talk. It was fantastic.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you. Again, Rosie Perez's new book is Handbook for an Unpredictable Life. It is published by Crown. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.